Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider, talking all things college football week 8. Payne, the national championship chase starting to take shape, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Huge game for Florida State this week against Wake Forest. Looking forward to it.
You know what? I mean, hey, we talk about streaks in college football. Your beloved Seminoles have to do everything and then some to keep that bowl streak intact.
I think they actually would have had a chance if they beat Miami, but the schedule's tough moving forward.
Now, no one said everything in life that was worth achieving ever came easy, so we'll keep tabs on the Seminoles. But, of course, that's not going to get our primary focus today. We got a handful of big games on tap. But just wanted to get your thoughts real quick on some of the things that unfolded last week in Payne, whether it was Oregon outlasting Washington thanks to a missed field goal as time expired, the Michigan burial of Wisconsin, which we so eloquently predicted and saw the line correspond with the way we like to see things trend when we give games out on Wednesday morning, or a game that you were actually a lot more bullish and I was a little skeptical on, the Georgia meltdown in Death Valley against the LSU Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably quickly touch on all three if you wanted to. I didn't get the good vibe from that Georgia defense looking at all the metrics. I thought they were a bit phony. Certainly loaded with talent, and they're going to be good in years to come, but you could run on them a little bit, and I thought if LSU could do that, they were going to have success in that game, and sure enough, LSU was able to move the ball a little bit on the ground. I think Clyde Edwards was averaging nearly 8 yards a carry. You got Joe Burrow going a little bit on the ground as well. And I know Coach O had kind of clamored for him just to use his legs a little bit more. And he did that, had 89 yards. So I liked what I saw from LSU. Will that continue this week? Who knows? Oregon with a little bit of a phony victory, I thought. Washington outgained them by 1.5 yards per play. So you win some, you lose some. You lose a game against Stanford that you probably should have won. And you probably won a game here that you should have lost. And then, as you mentioned, Michigan, big win for everyone listening to this podcast. It's a team that we're extremely high on. We've had them in the top six of our power ratings for weeks now. You could kind of see this moving forward in the right direction as Shea gets more comfortable with the new system, with his weapons. Chris Evans was back this past week. He'll get some, you know, his game legs under him. I think that's another nice weapon for the offense. It looks like Black could return there from the broken foot. So this is an offense that I think continues to trend in the right direction. Relatively speaking, though, the question is, can they win enough games? Because the schedule, an absolute gauntlet at this point.
Yeah, when you look at it, I mean, big things ahead. They'll have a chance to control their own destiny, but getting those results, of course, all the more important. But you mentioned the Michigans of the world, the LSUs of the world, the Oregons, all of those teams, games that we intend to preview in greater detail. For all the big game breakdowns here on the Bet the Board podcast, we bring in our five-star blue chip recruit. You can, of course, can follow Dusty Dvoracek on Twitter at Dusty Dvoracek. And Dust, before we get into some of the biggest games that are going to have major implications on the national championship chase, I can say with some level of confidence the biggest news that came out of college football this week had nothing to do with a player on the field. Nick Bosa electing to withdraw from Ohio State. How does that change the dynamic for the Buckeyes? And what's your take on that as a former player?
Well, you know, great question, Todd. And, you know, as far as Ohio State goes, it clearly affects them, right? I mean, the last time we saw Nick Bosa, it was a sack fumble touchdown against TCU. That's the kind of impact this guy can have on the game. And it's also why he's likely not coming back to college football, because he is that talented and he's going to get drafted probably in the top five picks of the NFL draft, you know, next spring. So I think Ohio State will be okay, though. Clearly, when you remove maybe the most dynamic pass rusher and run stopper along the defensive line of college football, it's going to affect you. But I think on the field, Ohio State's going to be just fine. You know, the real question here, I think, is, you know, what does this mean for college football? And we've kind of seen this before, right, with guys not electing to play in bowl games. And I've said on my show, at what point is it when a team is out of the national championship hunt and a guy's a big-time opportunity in the NFL draft, is he just going to say, you know what, I'm not risking it. It's not worth it. That wasn't even the case here because they still have an opportunity to win a national championship. But I can't sit here and rip Nick Bosa. I mean, I don't like it as a former player. I wish guys, you know, would buy into the team aspect. I wish guys would, you know, when you start a season, you're going to finish a season, that it's also about the guys next to you, not just about yourself. But I also understand the business side of the National Football League. And, you know, you are in charge of your business, and your business is your body. And so I can fully understand he had to get the surgery, and he wants to come back and he wants to get himself right. So I can't rip him. I can just say I don't like it for college football, because I don't think this will be the last time we see this. And I just hope that we don't see a trend. But at the same time, he has this right. He has this opportunity. And, you know, sometimes you have to make tough, hard decisions. And what comes down to millions and millions of dollars, which it looks like Nick Bosa has put himself in position to make. You know, it's tough to be overly critical to a young man that's looking after his and his family's best interest. But big picture, college football-wise, I'm just not a fan. I fear this will not be the last we see of this, and I just hope it's not an ongoing trend that we see in the coming years in college football.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time here, Dusty, but that's what was going to be my follow-up in terms of setting a precedent. What's to stop any of these kids who go out there and have one tremendous season? They give the NFL a glimpse of what their potential is. We see a lot of these mocks, their top five, and before they even play game one and say maybe their junior or senior season, they go, you know what? We're sitting the entire season out. We're going to focus on training methods. We're going to work on our speed, quickness, agility. You guys have seen enough of me in game action to know what you're going to get at the next level.
Well, didn't we kind of see this? Wasn't there speculation with Jadeveon Clowney after his sophomore season? There was an article out, why is he even going to play his junior season? Now, he went out there and played. I think he played not to get hurt, as opposed to, you know, being the best player that he possibly can. I don't have an answer for that, Todd. My hope is we don't see that. The reality is it's more than likely a matter of time because, you know, once guys feel that they've shown enough or they've done enough and the hay is in the barn – as it relates to their opportunity to maximize on their earning potential, it won't be long before we see somebody say, you know what, I've done what I need to do. There's nothing more for me to show other than hurt my stock, get injured, and then obviously not be able to make the type of money I could have had I just trained, sat out, and got ready for the upcoming NFL draft. Again, I don't like it, but I fear that it's a real reality that's coming towards college football.
Payne, from a point spread perspective, and I don't want to get into individual players on the defensive side. I mean, we talk about it in the NFL version of the Bet the Board podcast about who certain guys are that may be worth 2 points on that side. In college football, do you feel that guys like a Nick Bosa can be more valuable to the point spread than what you see from their NFL counterparts?
Yeah, I would think so, especially at this level when you're looking at opposing offensive lines and, you know, kind of the struggles that offensive lines have. It's not really a deep position throughout college football. And I think specific to this Ohio State Buckeyes defense, right, it's not great. It is down from years prior, 41st in overall defensive efficiency. So when you lose Nick Bosa, that's trouble. It doesn't shock me, though, right? Like Nick Bosa played down here, went to St. Thomas Aquinas. This was kind of his shtick. He always, from what I've been told, kind of thought he was bigger than the game. It was more about going to Ohio State, getting in and getting out. So it doesn't shock me. What was the timetable on his return from this injury? Was it something that he was going to be back from in a couple of weeks? Was he going to be able to contribute potentially at the end of the season? It seemed like a pretty severe injury, I was told.
Yeah, the original prognosis, and of course, I won't claim to know exactly what core muscle surgery entails. They had talked about a potential return in early November to get him ready for maybe the last couple regular season games and conference championship and any playoff runs. So clearly he wasn't going to be at full speed necessarily until Ohio State needed him most. But as Dusty mentioned and you allude to, you can't fault a guy for trying to take that payday and protect his ability and talents going to the next level. So as it pertains to Ohio State, we'll see what kind of ramifications it has on the field. I know the Buckeyes will be a team we cover in a lot more extensive detail going forward with some of their marquee games, but it also provides us the perfect segue to their biggest competition in the Big Ten.
Todd, I just want to say one thing real quick. It helps when you're Ohio State and you've got a guy like Chase Young that can step in when Nick Bosa goes down. You know what I mean? I mean, they are loaded up front. And again, I'm not trying to diminish what he means to that defense and what his loss means. But, you know, again, I think that from a depth perspective, they've got that there along the defensive line.
Oh, for sure. And I think that goes without saying, and you raise a very good point for some of our listeners when you try and attribute point value. Whereas if you create the parallel to, say, an Ed Oliver for Houston, there's nobody that Houston can plug in to replace that productivity. Ohio State, obviously, recruiting at a high level, a laundry list of five-star recruits. It's next man up. And while they might not be able to match Nick Bosa, you know, exact productivity, it's not a massive drop-off like we would see at a Group of Five program if they had a talent of this caliber. So when we go into it, guys, Michigan on the road at Michigan State. Michigan, one loss so far this season, finds themselves as a 7-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 41.5. We've seen major under money come in so far. Michigan State has really dominated this series of late, winning 8 out of 10 meetings. You have to go all the way back to 2007, guys, to find the last time Michigan covered in this rivalry. And we know we're going to hear it quite a bit before kickoff on Saturday. Michigan, 0-17 against ranked teams on the road since 2006. So, Payne, we'll start with you here. I mean, I know all three of us were in agreement with the Michigan Wolverines being the side against Wisconsin. Have we seen enough from the Wolverines to really upgrade their power rating and lead us to believe that, hey, this is a top five team more than capable of crashing the college football playoff party?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that this is a team that's hovering around being one of the five best teams in the country. We've had them power rated there for a couple weeks now. You know, this game right here, I think, is why, you know, Michigan put the full court press on Shea Patterson. And it's time to see if that investment pays off. I am not sure when you look at this game if Higdon is going to be able to consistently do some things snap to snap in this spot. So this is going to be on Shea Patterson, I would think. You know, Sparty is very good stopping the run. Number two. In stopping runs at or behind the line of scrimmage. I think Michigan's offensive line has improved some since they got their tail whipped at Notre Dame, but I think this is all about Shea Patterson being able to move the ball again through the air. That's where Michigan State's susceptible, 111th in completion rate, 77th in defensive pass efficiency, and I think that's really how you have to set this game up here. What I saw from Shea Patterson last week, it looked great against Wisconsin. I still think he's holding on to the ball a little bit too long, made a few key errors. I know we texted back and forth, Todd, throughout that game, and there was multiple times where Michigan was in field goal range and he kind of, you know, runs himself into a sack, runs himself into pressure, doesn't always take care of the football. I think the positive is, you know, Michigan State doesn't really get after the quarterback, so he should have some time here. Sparty, 106th in passing down sack rate. This just feels like a game to me that there's not a lot of room. There's not a lot of, you know, there's zero margin here for error. I think if Shea can hit a few plays in the pass game, maybe sprinkle in an explosive run or two, which we saw last week, that'll go a long way because that Sparty defense is aggressive. You can make a few plays on them, but he's just got to cherish the football. And as you mentioned, you know, I don't know if it's about covering the spread for them. It's about escaping here with a win, and it would snap that 17-game road losing streak to ranked opponents on the road that you mentioned.
Hey, you know, and Payne, I want to hop in right there on what you were talking about. And Sparty is fantastic stopping the run, right? Well, part of that is a numbers game. They sell out to stop the run, right? And as you mentioned, I think it's a great point. Very susceptible on the back end. I think 118th in the country against the pass. So, and as you mentioned, they don't get after the quarterback very much. So while they're going to sell out, I've watched both these teams on tape as I've been living in Big Ten country the last couple of weeks. And I really like that Michigan offensive line, the physicality they're playing with, the double teams getting up to the second level. Caron Higdon's got five straight 100-yard games. I mean, he's been fantastic for him. You sprinkle in some Shea Patterson. Had the big 81-yard run last week. He ran for 90 yards. They went for 320 on Wisconsin last week. Now, Wisconsin isn't the defense of old, but still, I think that's extremely impressive. Most yards the Badgers have given up since 2011. I just like their overall vibe of what Michigan's doing offensively, and I would agree. I think you still have to try to establish the run game. We saw Penn State run for 205 against Sparty just a week ago, so I think you still have to try to establish that rushing attack, but this is a play-action pass. This is where you're looking for your tight end, Zach Gentry, Nico Collins, Donovan Peoples-Jones, receivers on the outside. They're going to have to win some one-on-one matchups, and I completely agree with what you said. This is why Shea Patterson was brought to Ann Arbor. And if you look at Michigan offensively, they've got more balance, more yards per play. They're a more efficient offense with him running the show. So I think it's going to be a tough matchup for Michigan State. Michigan State's defense, they can get after you, good defensive line. But again, they sacrifice and they give up a lot on the back end to try to eliminate the rushing attack. And I still think Michigan will have minimal success running the ball. And I think there's going to be a lot to be had down the field.
Dusty, I want to ask you about the mentality in a rivalry like this. Clearly, people view Michigan as big brother, although by the results over the last 10 meetings, you wouldn't quite know that. I mean, you played in an in-state rivalry that was extremely hostile in Bedlam, where you guys owned Oklahoma State. Michigan State players come out this week and say, last week we brought back the chip, and that's just something you can never lose. And the same thing with the underdog thing and how they think of us. Never lose it. We understand what's at stake. It's a rivalry game. How real is that to motivating a team coming into it? And do you feel that Michigan State can actually believe that, knowing that they've had Michigan's number over the last 10 years or so?
They've won 8 of 10. I mean, they can keep playing little brother, big brother card all they want. The reality is Michigan State is the superior team in that state over the past decade. So I actually think in this situation, I look at the other way. I'll take you back. My first 2 years at Oklahoma, we lose to Oklahoma State my freshman, sophomore year. Had a chance to play for a national title, no one. They came into our backyard the final game of the season, upset us massively. I think we were like a 3-touchdown favorite. We get beat, right? Next year, we go up to Stillwater. They kick us in the teeth. That third season, though, we're big brother, and if you look at the all-time, you know, wins-loss, Oklahoma superior, that was not about us being big brother. That was about revenge. That was about us, you know, winning back our state. So as I look at this, I think a lot of motivation, it's going to be with Michigan, and it's going to be with Jim Harbaugh. I would have to think – he's beating that drum all week long. He's reminding these guys that they're 1-2 with him as the coach against Sparty and that they need to regain their state. So I'm actually going to go on the opposite side. Though we look at it, big brother, little brother, Michigan State's always been that little brother role. I think it'll be Michigan who's more motivated in this one because, let's face it, over the past decade, they've been little brother.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Numbers don't lie, and you get players like Lawrence Marshall coming out saying it's getting old pretty quickly as a fifth-year player at the University of Michigan saying that they want to try and regain the balance of power. Payne, last thing on this game, we look at the number here sitting right at a touchdown. You think we're more likely to see 6.5 or 7.5 as we approach kickoff?
I'm not quite sure. I think when I look at my number, it is a touch higher than 7, and I think we're trending a little bit that way now. But you do have the rivalry aspect. You have the home dog aspect. You have history on Sparty's side. So I think people will gravitate a little bit towards that. You know, Brian Lewerke is going to have a magical game here. Sparty's going to have to keep it close and just kind of hope Mark D'Antonio's brilliance can kind of, you know, be on full display here and pull out a game that he probably shouldn't win. And that was similar to what we saw last week. Like, Michigan State wasn't great last week. First half wasn't great, less than 4 yards per play there. They're outgained by 1.5 yards per play. And yet D'Antonio somehow wins a game as nearly a 2-touchdown dog. So I think they're going to need a little magic this week as well. One thing to monitor there for that Sparty offense, they had two guys on the starting offensive line that were beat up last week, didn't play both guard positions. You're going to want to have to monitor that this week as well.
Here's
so
my question
something
for
to look for
Here's
there.
Here's my question for you guys. And I would, to answer your question, if it were me, I would think it would tick up over a touchdown, in my opinion. Where's Michigan State going to get the offense, guys? They're running the football at 3.4 yards a clip. Okay? I mean, I really like Felton Davis outside. He's got great size, and he obviously had the go-ahead touchdown to beat Penn State on Saturday. I think Brian Lewerke, he's a solid quarterback. I don't think he's great. But they're facing, I think, what's the best defense in college football. They get after you up front. Those linebackers can flat out run, and they got no problem bringing pressure, going man-to-man on the outside. So I totally agree with you, Payne. Lewerke's going to have a magical day. Felton Davis is going to have to be featured. I guess I have a big question. Is L.J. Scott going to play? He's missed 4 straight games. He's questionable this week. They need him to try to get some type of balance offensively. I just got to tell you guys, as I look at it, I just don't know where Sparty's going to be able to muster up the offense and move the football against that potent Wolverine defense.
It's a great question, and one I think Payne and I have asked ourselves the last couple of years in this particular rivalry, and somehow, some way, Michigan's
going to be a trick player too,
yeah,
I would think.
Michigan State finds a way to pick up the 14, 17 points they need to keep it competitive, and from a point spread perspective, I mean, if you believe what the market's telling you, 17 will be enough to at least get you a push as this total trends toward 41. But guys, from Big Ten country, where Michigan and Michigan State will do battle, to Pac-12 country, and College Game Day makes its inaugural trip out to Pullman, Washington. We've seen money come in early this morning on the Oregon Ducks, taking it off a field goal. So as we look at betonline.ag, we're seeing this number sit at soft three and 66.5. Washington State puts its undefeated record, and that, of course, an undefeated against the spread record at 6-0 on the line. They've covered eight straight in this rivalry. You have to go back to October 3rd, 2009, Dusty, to find the last time Oregon was able to get the cash at the window. But I ask you about the letdown situation. They emptied the tank against Washington last weekend. Do you think they'll be able to bring that same level of energy and emotion on the road for a pivotal divisional showdown?
It'll be tough, and let's not forget, Washington State's coming off a bye, right? So they're going to be well-rested. They're going to have plenty of time to game plan, try to take Justin Herbert out of what he's doing. Look, Oregon's shown to be a good team. Had it not been for a colossal mistake at the goal line and a touchdown that got negated, you know, Oregon's probably sitting here undefeated, and they're sitting there atop the Pac-12 North. So I do think they're a good football team. But, you know, when you play Washington, you know what you're in for. It's a tough, physical, grueling 60 minutes of football, and they had to go over 60 minutes a week ago. So you can't downplay that effect it's going to have on this football team. And as I mentioned, Washington State's going to be fresh and going to be extremely well rested. It sets up extremely well for the Cougars in this matchup. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, eight straight wins covering the spread against Oregon. From what I found, Washington State, eight straight wins against the spread at home. So a couple of trends here definitely favoring the Washington State Cougars.
Payne, when we look at this number, and we talk all the time about appropriately adjusting based on the situation, watching line movement in this game has been fascinating. Washington State actually opened as a short favorite. You saw Oregon swing to a short favorite of their own right, and it seems the market can't agree on where this number should ultimately settle. Every time it gets to 3.5, you see Oregon money. You saw money come in on Washington State minus the 2.5. Is 3 the perfect number for this particular football game?
That's where I made it. And, you know, I don't know where this is going to close. I've been a little shocked with this movement back and forth. You know, the line paints the picture that Wazoo is certainly the side here. And you could have taken 1.5 on Sunday or pick 'em on Monday. We were out to Washington State minus 3 this morning. We're starting to get off that number. Shops that went to 3.5 on Tuesday, the market didn't seem to like that number. And we talk about this all the time. I think the markets are getting a little more sophisticated as time goes on. I can tell you just a handful of years ago, if we were looking at this game, we're getting Washington State plus 3 in this spot, not minus 3. So it's something to consider. The side is Wazoo here based on a lot of the situations we discussed and Dusty mentioned with the bye week, with Oregon playing almost, you know, 5 quarters of football. So that's why we're seeing this move. There is professional money on Washington State. I just don't know how much more they're going to attack this line at this point.
Yeah, it's been crazy to try and watch, and you mentioned the market, and we've seen it. And we've talked about at great lengths how college basketball games where you normally would have been able to take 2, 2.5, you're forced to lay 2 these days. As they anticipate a little bit of the situation, knowing how this game is going to be bet. Be curious to get Dave Mason's take later on in the show as well to see what he's seen at the shop as far as public betting trends are concerned. But, Dusty, when I look at Washington State's offense, Gardner Minshew transfers in from East Carolina, picks up right where every Mike Leach quarterback seems to do, averaging over 400 yards passing. What does a defense have to do to be successful against an air raid offense and really put this team on its heels knowing that it's so one-dimensional?
Got to tackle in space. You know, the one thing I've seen from Gardner Minshew, he's decisive. The ball's out quick, right? That's why he's got almost 69% completion. What he also does, he spreads it around. They've got 8 guys with double-digit receptions and 5 of those guys with 24 or more receptions. Throw a lot of swing passes, throw it to the running backs out of the backfield, you know, short underneath routes, screens outside. So I've played against Mike Leach's defense a long time ago, and they're not a whole lot different than what they are today. And the number one thing we used to always talk about when you play Mike Leach, you've got to be able to tackle in space because the ball comes out quick. It negates a pass rush a lot of the time, and it's all about getting their playmakers out in space and forcing you to be good tacklers. So if Oregon can tackle well, a lot of catch tackles, they're going to have success. If they're not, they get exposed out in space. Could be a long day for that Oregon defense.
One thing about Oregon that we know, this has not been a team that plays its best football away from Eugene. 3-9 straight up the last 12 times on the highway, and a woeful 3-8-1 against the spread during that time period as well. But clearly a matchup that'll go a long way in giving us a little bit of clarity as far as the Pac-12 North is concerned.
I think a lot of points here, guys. I don't know what y'all said the over-under is, but I look at this, and I think Justin Herbert and C.J. Verdell are going to have success. I think there's going to be balance for them on offense. I worry a little bit with a banged-up Oregon offensive line. They lose their key offensive tackle. Guard Dallas Wormack likely to play. But I still think Oregon's going to move the ball. I think a lot of points. I think this number, the scoreboard's going to get lit up on Saturday in Pullman.
Hey, Payne, one last thing on this game, I guess. Mario Cristobal coached in your neck of the woods at FIU. Have you been impressed with the level of toughness he's been able to instill in the offensive line, knowing how integral he was to some of Alabama's success?
Yeah, he's changed it a lot. I mean, he is an offensive lineman at heart. He talks about it every week, so there has been some toughness from that position. But when I look at what Oregon's been able to do offensively, there needs to be more. Like Justin Herbert, we all talked about him last week, probably the number one quarterback taken in the NFL draft, but they were just held to 4.7 yards per play at home against Washington. That's 1 yard below the national average. So, you know, Oregon was outgained last week by 1.5 yards per play. They're going to need more from their offense here, I would think. And, you know, you look at some of these things. I know all the Ducks fans were bitching about the unlucky loss to Stanford. Things have a way of evening out because we saw that last week. Probably a game they shouldn't have won. And when you look to probably attack Washington State's defense, it's on the ground. So that offensive line that you mentioned has to be vital here, has to play a role, because Washington State 119th in defensive rush efficiency. So can Oregon take advantage of that? That's the big question. We'll see how that goes. Dusty mentioned their stud left tackle being out. That could hinder some things even more. When you look, I don't know. I was shocked to see this. I don't know if any of you guys were. Wazoo's secondary has been fantastic this season. 11th in defensive passing efficiency. They're getting after the quarterback too. 10th in passing down sack rate. So with the left tackle out, I think that's a matchup to watch in this game. Wazoo has been vulnerable to the explosive pass. So I think Justin Herbert's got to really open some things up. If he can hit the explosive pass or two, get the ground game going, I think that'll be the key for this one.
Yeah, it's interesting about Washington State. I know what the metrics say, and I don't get to see a lot of teams live in the flesh, but did get to see Washington State that Friday night against USC and was underwhelmed with some of the athletes in the secondary. JT Daniel able to throw some good balls there and really put the Cougars on their heels. We'll see if Justin Herbert and his NFL caliber potential can do the same. But numbers don't lie. I just have some questions about the competition they faced in the likes of Utah and Oregon State in recent weeks. But again, it should be an outstanding watch from Pullman, knowing what these teams have to play for. To Big 12 country, though, gentlemen, it's Oklahoma coming off the bye on the road in Fort Worth, laying 8 points. Total in this game, 60.5 at betonline.ag. TCU, I mean, there's no other way to put it than saying they've been an absolute mess offensively. Three straight games, 17 points or less, and not exactly against defensive heavyweights in Texas, Iowa State, and Texas Tech. They're 110th in the country with 17 yards per point, meaning they just haven't been all that efficient. And Dusty, 128th in the country, averaging 3 giveaways per game. What is going on with Coach Patterson's offense right now?
Sean Robinson is struggling, fellas. I mean, he's just turned the ball over at an alarming rate, and you referenced it. I mean, 18 giveaways at this point, it's just crazy. When you're 128th in the country in turnover margin, that's problematic. I mean, you're not going to win a whole lot of games. So they're not taking it away at a high enough clip, but really they're just giving it away far too much. And I got to be honest with you guys, doesn't it feel like it's time for Michael Collins? I mean, doesn't it at least feel like it's time to see what's behind door number two? You know, going into the season, I was at Big 12 Media Days. I sat with Sean Robinson. I sat with Gary Patterson. I talked to him about his young quarterback, and he was just gushing about him, about his leadership, how much he's grown. It led me to believe for him to bring a true sophomore to Big 12 Media Day, he really believed in this guy. So I was expecting, you know, this was like the highest quarterback recruit in the history of TCU. There was a lofty expectations for Sean Robinson. So I kind of came in very bullish on him without seeing a whole lot of tape. He started against Tech last year in an unimpressive performance. They got the victory. But other than that, you didn't see much of Sean Robinson. But the more you see, the more you realize he's just not making good decisions with the football. Michael Collins, a sophomore quarterback, who they've been high on. I don't know what to expect out of him. I just know what I've seen from Sean Robinson. And I think at some point, Gary Patterson has to say, we've got to take a look at what's behind door number two, because the reality is you still have a really good defense that leads the Big 12 in total defense, third down defense, scoring defense. You can't waste that, right? They haven't run the football effectively, and they've got weapons outside. Jalen Reagor, Kevontae Turpin, they've got speed, and they need somebody that can deliver the football without turning the football over. So for me, as we get closer and closer to this game, I'm really intrigued to see not just if Michael Collins starts, but if Sean Robinson goes out there and he turns the football over, how quick does GP go to his backup quarterback?
And you mentioned defense. Oklahoma, of course, they have their own struggles, Dusty, ranking 76th out of 129 schools in points allowed, 97th in total defense. Payne, I guess when I look at this number and I try and figure out, revenge is a very real thing, but we saw this matchup not once but twice last year, and Oklahoma overwhelmed TCU in space offensively, and when they forced TCU to play from behind, it really felt like they were playing downhill. Has that much changed to lead us to believe that TCU can bridge the gap in what we've seen as a home field advantage that's been largely overvalued given the Horned Frogs' copious failures when you talk about a gambling perspective?
Yeah, I think that's where this line is certainly trending towards. I mean, I won't be on TCU here. The number is now heading towards 8, which is right around where we made it, so not a ton of value. I think you made mention Lincoln Riley has had his way with Gary Patterson's defense. 2 years ago, 6.7 yards per play in the matchup. Last year, I'm sorry, 2 years ago, 8.1 yards per play. Last year, 6.7 yards per play. I do think TCU's defense is a hair overrated, too. Like, I don't buy them being the 14th best defense in the country. I'll be intrigued, though, here to see how Kyler Murray looks. Certainly, you know, a cannon for an arm. He's a baseball guy, but to me, not a natural quarterback. You can still fool and trick him a little bit. TCU has had an issue taking the ball away this season, but I think Murray's got to limit the mistakes, because Gary Patterson's going to throw some stuff at him that Kyler hasn't seen on film or that they've produced against any other offense this year, I would think. The one thing you're going to want to do this week, though, is make an adjustment to your power number for weeks like this in general. When big games are on the schedule, you're going to want to pump up a team with a mobile quarterback just a little bit. He's going to be more apt to run, and we've seen that with Murray this year in the nail biter against Iowa State. Murray ran it 15 times. Close game against Texas, ran it 11 times. You play FAU in a blowout, just 4 runs. So you always want to make that adjustment here. Your number isn't going to be static week to week. I think when you look at this matchup, TCU's defense can be ran on a little bit. 61st in defensive rush efficiency. So if you can get Sermon and Murray and even Sutton going on the ground a little bit, I think that opens some things up. TCU is still vulnerable to the explosive pass, 73rd in the country in that regard. So I think if you can get the ground game going, you should have some success hitting Brown deep one or two times this game.
And you mentioned Kyler Murray, Payne. He comes out, of course, saying the right things during the bye week, talking about how much competition they brought back to practice. Dusty, you're around this program obviously much more than Payne and myself. When you look at Oklahoma having 2 weeks to stew over that loss to Texas, we know about the change on the defensive side with Ruffin McNeil assuming responsibilities for Coach Stoops as DC. What do you think you're going to get from Oklahoma in this spot against a team they've had some success against, but coming into the season look to be some of the most likely competition as far as knocking them from their perch atop the league?
I think Oklahoma's chomping at the bit to get back on the field. I mean, the reality is the only way to get a bad taste out of your mouth is to go out, play better, and win, right? So they're ready to get back on the field. And you know, you referenced it. Mike Stoops is out. Ruffin McNeil's in. It's going to be interesting because I got to tell you, I don't expect much change. I don't think schematically you may see a little bit more four-down linemen, you know, more even front than odd front a little bit. But other than that, I don't think you're going to see personnel changes. I think that they just thought that they needed a new voice. And I think the hope is Ruffin McNeil, known to be a motivator of young men to get guys to play with their hair on fire. That's kind of the hope. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but that's not always a great plan. You know what I mean? If you're just going to say, well, the adjustment is we're going to play harder, that sounds great in theory, but it's another thing for that to actually go out there and work. So I don't know exactly what to expect out of Oklahoma's defense from a where are they going to improve standpoint. The reality is they got to tackle better. They got to take the ball away more. They got to get off the field on third down, something they have not done well whatsoever to this point in the season. So if TCU's offense wants to get back on track. Maybe they have a great opportunity here. You know, I expect just offensively, I think Oklahoma offensively is going to continue to have success. I think the real key is something that Payne hit on in there, explosive plays. This is an Oklahoma offense that feasts off explosive plays, whether it's Marquise Brown, you know, whether it's Kyler Murray, CeeDee Lamb. I mean, they take their shots, right, and they hit them a lot. So for Gary Patterson, I would have to think probably the biggest point of emphasis this week is not letting guys behind you. And when guys catch the football, to get them down on the ground. Because if TCU can force Oklahoma to drive the length of the field as opposed to hitting some of those explosive plays, I think it's going to give them a puncher's chance in this one.
Should be a good game. We'll see if TCU can get themselves back on track. Something they really haven't been able to do from an against the spread perspective when playing in Fort Worth. Only 2-14 against the number the last 16 home games, 10-21 against the spread their last 31. But Oklahoma, despite an 8-0 straight up record as a road favorite the last 8 times they've traveled, only 2-6 against the number. All trends to keep in mind as you ultimately arrive on a decision for this Big 12 showdown on Saturday. From the Big 12, though, to the ACC, and Payne, I think this number would surprise a lot of casual fans when you see two unbeaten teams doing battle that have played pretty close football games. It's Clemson, a 17.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game sits at 55.5, up a shade from the opener. Last year, Clemson won this game 38-31. They ran for over 220 yards, but the Wolfpack had plenty of success throwing the football. And for me, I look at Ryan Finley against this Clemson secondary. If NC State's going to find a way to cover, I think that's how they have to get the job done.
Oh, you hit it right on the head. It's going to be a game that's on Ryan Finley's shoulders because the Wolfpack can't run the ball. And Clemson's defense, I think, is one of the best run-stopping units in all of college football. But we've talked about this. The Tigers can be had in the pass game. Every time we've broken down Clemson this year, whether it was the preseason podcast or big games during the week, that is the glaring weakness. That secondary, 70th in defensive pass efficiency, 68th in explosive pass defense. And I think the scarier, you know, part about some of those numbers is Clemson has one of the best defensive lines. They rotate 7-8 guys. They get after the quarterback, whether it's standard downs or passing downs. And so to take that one step further, Clemson's defense, they faced one passing offense this year inside the top 20. That was week 2 when Texas A&M had played just 60 minutes of football with that brand new system. So I think, you know, it's extremely difficult for A&M there after 60 minutes. There's no way that level of offense was going to be operating or close to maximum capacity. So that was a game where Clemson's defense got exposed a little bit, I thought. Every other passing offense Clemson has faced this season, below the national average in efficiency. You talk about Georgia Southern, 114th, Georgia Tech, 99th, Syracuse, 104th. Wake Forest was the best at 68th after A&M. So now you get Ryan Finley, fourth most efficient passing offense in college football. The one thing that I've been shocked to see is the Wolfpack offensive line. They've been good in pass protection. Top 5 in both standard down and passing down sack rate allowed. So I think if NC State's offense is going to be able to make some plays through the air, if they can get some protection there for Finley. The one annoying thing, and I know Dusty's playing defense, is if you can't get off the field on third down, you start to see things snowball and offenses have some great success if they're converting third downs. NC State, number one in the entire country in third down success rate. So that could be something annoying. The other thing, you mentioned the total ticking up a little bit. It could be, one, because both offenses, I think, are going to have some success here. But it's going to be a slick field. It looks like there's some rain overnight. It's going to leak into the morning and maybe early afternoon, but it subsides right around kickoff time. If the field's slick, that's advantage to the wide receivers. They know where they're going. They know where they want to get in and out of their routes. So I think that could make the pass games a little more efficient for both teams as well if it's a slick field.
And you mentioned wide receivers. Kelvin Harmon, the leader of the pack, so to speak. 33 catches so far this season, 534 yards. He'll be a guy that Clemson, I'm sure, has schemed for with a bye week leading up to this game. Dusty, when we look at Clemson in the big picture, I mean, this was a side much like the Alabamas of the world. We thought, hey, they were a shoo-in to get to the college football playoff. And metric-wise, number 4 in the country in terms of yards per play defense, number 5 in terms of yards per play offense. But to me, when I watch the Clemson Tigers, I don't see a team that I think is capable of winning a national title, at least right now. Now, I know they made the change to Trevor Lawrence with Kelly Bryant transferring and Travis Etienne averaging over 9 yards per carry. But have you been encouraged by what you've seen from Clemson in that 63-3 win against Wake Forest, or a little bit disappointed that Tigers haven't kind of picked up where we thought they would this season?
Well, I'll just say this, Todd. Give me a team outside of Alabama that hasn't shown some warts this season, that you haven't looked at some point and said, I don't know. I mean, even Ohio State was down late in the third quarter at TCU and it looked like they were going to lose that game, right? I mean, it took a come-from-behind win against Penn State for them to win that. So, I mean, when you start looking, Notre Dame, I mean, they've had some nail-biters as well. Last week, they kind of got lucky to beat Pitt. So, I mean, when you look at it, aside from Alabama, I don't know if anybody is a shoe-in to play in the national championship or someone you say, I am unbelievably confident this is a team. But I do like this Clemson football team. We've talked about their defense. I still love that front seven. I think that front four can just flat out get after people. Now, I do expect Ryan Finley and this offense to have success. I mean, last year he went for 338 and three touchdowns. We forget, you know, they're winning that game at 21-7 at halftime. It took a Clemson second half comeback. And let's not forget 2 years ago, right? I mean, it was a missed 33-yard field goal, or else Clemson doesn't even play for a national championship. So, you know, when you look at it, I do expect NC State to be able to have some success, but I'm still bullish on the Clemson Tigers. And, you know, I talked about their defense. I know that they got some question marks on the back end, but I still think front fours ultimately rule the day in being able to stop rushing attacks and get after quarterbacks. And they have that as good as anybody in college football. What's impressive to me with Clemson this year is on the offensive side. Right. I mean, we know about Trevor Lawrence and what he gives them in the vertical passing game, but they're the number four rushing offense in college football. They're averaging 280 yards a game. And Travis Etienne is quietly, I think, putting together the best season of any running back in college football. Two straight games where he's had three touchdowns, four straight games at 100 yards. During those four games, he's averaging over 10 yards per touch, boys. So I just look at this Clemson offense, and I think that they have the potential to be a juggernaut. That offensive line is blocking more physically. As Trevor Lawrence plays more football, gets more comfortable with the star-studded wide receivers he has, that's going to be a problem for opposing defenses. I think they have true balance. And with a pass rush and a defensive line like they have, to answer your original question, have they struggled at times against Syracuse or on the road against Texas A&M to maybe give you pause? Sure, but I could probably create that same narrative for a lot of teams throughout college football. For me, they're still the second best team behind Alabama as I look at it as we get ready for this week of college football.
And you mentioned last year having to come back against NC State. Clemson was pretty open about addressing their slow start so far this season. The Tigers have scored 253 points throughout 2018, just 38 of those coming in the first quarter. And as you lay big numbers in college football and look at all the different markets, a little bit of a perilous situation if teams can't get off to quick starts and you want to try and cover nearly three scores that it's going to take to get you to the window in this game. So if offense is going to rule the day in the ACC, though, gentlemen, defense should rule at Death Valley at night, where it's LSU at home against Mississippi State. You're looking at LSU, a 6.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 44.5. Mississippi State comes in off the bye. LSU back-to-back physical football games, a loss on the road in Gainesville against Florida. They followed up last week with one of the more dominant performances of the weekend, winning outright and doing comfortably as an 8-point underdog. And Payne, last year, the 30-point setback to Mississippi State was only the fifth such defeat for LSU since the start of the 2000 season. But when I look at these two teams, LSU has shown a little bit of vulnerability to opposing running attacks. Can Nick Fitzgerald and company put enough pressure on LSU in this spot?
They're going to need to, right? I mean, that's their one way to really attack a defense. And you would think they're going to come in here pretty confident. You know, you had some real nice success against an Auburn defense. You put up the national average of yards per play in that game, which I think is huge, right? When you consider the opponent, I know Auburn offensively is down, but that's still an elite defense. The prior 2 weeks to that against Kentucky and Florida combined, that Bulldogs offense averaged less than 3.5 yards per play on offense. I still think they're in the midst of learning this brand new offensive system with Joe Moorhead. So the bye probably helps, you know, accelerate that process some. But you mentioned it. You got to get going on the ground here. And I think LSU, you know, they've had some trouble stopping the run. Mississippi State lives on it. Fifth in rushing efficiency. You can take advantage of LSU in that area a little bit, just 56th in defensive rush efficiency. And the one thing that they've lacked is, as great as Dave Aranda's defense has been, they haven't made as many plays as usual at or behind the line of scrimmage. So if the Bulldogs offense can stay on schedule, they should be okay here. I know there's lots of question marks with Mississippi State's passing game, and it hasn't been efficient, you know, snap to snap. But because they run it so well, there has been just a lot of opportunities to be had in the play action game. They can pick up chunks. It'll be shocking, but Mississippi State's actually 25th in explosive passing because their ground game opens up so much. If Nick Fitzgerald can hit a big play or two throughout the course of this game and they can stay on schedule with the ground game, they have a great shot to pull off the upset here.
Now hang on real quick, Todd, before we get to me. I've got to know from Payne and maybe you, are we ready to give Ed Orgeron some credit? Because even after they have won some key games early in the year, I know on this podcast there was some people, I'm not going to name names, Payne, but there were some people that were still down on the Tigers. Are you ready to at least give the Tigers and Eddie O the due that they deserve? Come on.
Well, listen, I think there's a difference, right? Don't become one of the listeners and kind of hear what you like to hear. I am totally – listen, Ed Orgeron's been great so far this year. He's exceeded expectations. They're probably going to go over their win total. But when you start to, like, dig into the metrics and try to figure out how that projects moving forward – you know, it wasn't me. It's what you could put LSU, you could put Alabama, you could put Ohio State and match them up with their metrics. Like, it's not that we hate LSU. It's that we didn't really like their metrics. And when you've been outgained four times in six games, you know, that causes some concern. But last week I said, I thought Georgia's defense was a little phony and I thought LSU would be able to run on them. And that's exactly what they did. I think that was the biggest difference in that game. So I didn't have a penny on last week's game. It was great LSU showed up. But they were going to be able to have some success moving the ball on the ground against what I thought was just a vastly overrated Georgia defense.
Hey, and I'm just poking the bear a little bit, trying to have some fun. Not just you. Most of college football was extremely down on LSU, extremely down on Eddie O heading into the season. And I think they've been one of the real surprises in college football, as is Joe Burrow, guys. Now 3-0 against top 10 teams. He had three fourth down conversions that were huge and critical against Georgia. And I think that, you know, even though his completion percentage, it's right around 50%, and it's not anything that's going to light the hair on fire. But when he does like he did last week and he takes care of the football, they're able to get the takeaways and win the turnover battle 4-0. They're going to be a tough team to beat. And, you know, guys, I know this Mississippi State team very well, had them twice this season, had their game against Auburn where they ran for 369. And, you know, what I saw in that game is the offensive line really stepped up. The offensive line played with a different sense of physicality than what they had against Kentucky and what they had against Florida. That's a solid Auburn front seven. Now, they got exposed a little bit this past week. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how they lost to Tennessee. But I'm not going to, you know, you still have to be impressed with what they were able to do. You know, Nick Fitzgerald going for 195. Kylin Hill, 146 yards on the ground. I hate to make it so simple, but this is the matchup and this is the game. If Mississippi State is going to have a chance to go into Death Valley and win this football game, they're going to have to line up, be physical, and kind of beat LSU at their own game and be able to run the football. You know, you mentioned, Payne, can Nick Fitzgerald hit some of those shots down the field? How about this stat? 3 for 23 on passes of 15-plus yards down the field versus Power 5 team. That's the worst in college football for Nick Fitzgerald. So if he's going to do it, he hasn't shown to do it, you know, quite a bit of the time. I'm not saying that he can't, but it just hasn't been something that's been consistent. But what they have to do is they have to stick with their run game, and they've got to find a way to have success, because if they go out and try to throw the football around, Greedy Williams and company is going to make it very difficult on them. I love the matchup of a Devin White-led LSU defense against Nick Fitzgerald and this Mississippi State ground attack.
Dusty, you've seen Mississippi State up close and personal a couple times, and the one game for me that jumps off was their inability to run the football in Lexington against Kentucky. What you saw last weekend, or last time Mississippi State was on the field against Auburn, do we think it's because of the home-road splits? It sometimes is a little bit different when you go in hostile territory. Or did you see drastic improvement week to week to lead you to believe that, hey, Mississippi State was learning a new offense, they're going to get better with each passing week, and the 300-plus rushing yards they put up against Auburn is a harbinger of things to come?
Well, what I saw was – I saw two things. I saw the offensive line play better, right? And that's, and that's not something that you can just say, well, they played it a lot better, okay? So, you know, with a week off, feeling good about themselves, they're well-rested, their bodies feel right, you should expect that a similar level of physicality. I also saw just some slight subtlety changes, right, where they were motioning running backs starting at empty, motioning a running back back, some motions, some shifts to change the defense and maybe get the numbers to their liking. So I think that's only going to continue. And with now with an extra week to scheme, an extra week to really diagram this LSU defense, I think we'll see some more wrinkles, some more subtleties, just to try to get LSU maybe a gap out of place, maybe a half step away from where they need to be. I thought that that was key and pivotal against Kevin Steele and his defense, and I think it'll be the same against Dave Aranda and this LSU rush defense.
One thing I can say about this number, gentlemen, most odds makers opened at 6.5 and 44.5, and that's pretty much where it's remained since coming out. So clearly feeling strong in the numbers, but what should be a great game in the SEC West as LSU continues to receive accolades. Oh, by the way, a win here would put them in a position to potentially pull off an upset against Alabama 2 weeks down the road and really change the balance of power in that conference. One last game, Dusty, I want to get to, and you'll be on the call for it. So just want to get your thoughts real quick. It's Maryland going into Kinnick Stadium to take on the Iowa Hawkeyes. Number on this game, we'll call it 11.5 at betonline.ag. Total in this game in the low 50s. I guess the biggest question I have here, and don't want to spend a ton of time on it, will Maryland's vaunted ground game be able to have some success against this Iowa defensive front?
You know, it's Matt Canada and the jet sweep offense, right? Motion shifts. They're going to get you out of position, and they've had some success. You know, they play two quarterbacks, Kaysom Hill, Tyrell Pigrome, I think is what it is. I just know him as number three on the tape. But, you know, so they have two quarterbacks. Pigrome's more the mobile guy. I really like Ty Johnson in the backfield, and they get a multitude of guys, receivers, running backs, that all get touches in a multitude of ways. But, you know, this Iowa defense is stingy, man. You know, they are physical up front. They play fundamentally sound. They fly to the football. I got to tell you, I really think it's going to be tough for Maryland to move the football with a ton of efficiency. They don't throw it very well. They don't even try to throw it very much down the field. I would expect Iowa to really stack the box and try to eliminate really the only thing that Maryland does effectively offensively. And on the other side of that game, I got to tell you, this Iowa Hawk offense, Nate Stanley, I mean, it's like a vertical passing attack now, guys. 10 touchdowns in the last two games. Now, a lot of those are going to tight ends. It's still your NFL-style two backs, two tight ends, one back, two tight ends, that type of thing. But they are putting the football up in the air much more the last couple of weeks than what they typically have. We'll see if Nate Stanley and this Iowa Hawkeye offense can continue to roll. I just know that I'm fired up to go to Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City for the first time, boys. It's homecoming. It's going to be crazy, and I can't wait. 11 o'clock ESPN2. Join Molly McGrath, Mark Jones, and myself on the call.
I want to see you out in Iowa City Friday night, Dusty, partaking in some of the shenanigans and festivities to really
Come on, Todd, what are you setting me up for failure here, man? I got an 11 a.m. kick. That means I'm up at 5. I'm at the stadium at like 7:38. You want me to go out and get involved in shenanigans the night before on homecoming? I thought you were my friend, Todd. What's up?
I mean, when you come pulling into the stadium, there'll be plenty of tailgaters out there. It'll be a much more festive atmosphere than what you encountered at last weekend at Evanston. And last but not least, when we bet Nebraska, Payne and myself, and we take them +3.5, we expect an outright win. I'm a little bit disappointed you couldn't bring us home in regulation, and we had to sweat overtime between Northwestern and Nebraska.
Well, I don't think that you guys are as disappointed as Scott Frost and the Nebraska fans. Boy, that was painful to have to show that graphic, 0-6 for the first time in 129 years. I believe in Scott Frost. I think Scott Frost is going to get this thing turned around. To the level of success that Nebraska was, I don't think so. But I think that they will be a legitimate top 25 football team. And, you know, obviously sometimes it's an addition by subtraction. They've lost 20 players since December. They have no depth. And, you know, he's being very demanding and asking a lot of his players. And the buy-in, I think it's getting there. So I believe in him big picture. But, gosh, man, that was tough to stomach. When you're up 14 in the fourth quarter and up 10 with 5 to play, you sure feel like that one's in the bag. Even Scott Frost was dancing with his players on the sidelines. It wasn't dancing at the podium after the game when they took the L in Evanston.
That's what I was going to say. And Payne gets full credit, assuming that Nebraska does get that 12th game on the schedule against Bethune-Cookman. Not all the
time. It's
already
done deal.
Not all the time you get to cash in under 6.5 wins for the regular season after a team's only played 6 games. So a hat tip to you, Mr. Payne, for calling
well done,
that so eloquently.
It's a heck of a pick, man.
Hey, before the season started.
That completely makes up for any and all negative things you've said about LSU and Eddie O.
It's fine. The other one we're cooking with is under in Kansas State. And I know people are passionate about their team. We hear it all the time. We get chirped all the time. If you pick against someone's favorite team or you go against someone's favorite team or say something negative, everyone's just so passionate. Trust me when I say I don't care if the team's LSU, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama. We just look at the numbers, and that's all it is. We really strip the team name from the whole equation.
And the jersey colors, the head coach, you name it. That's the way we do business around these fine parts. Saturday morning, tune in, catch Dusty on the telecast, Iowa against the Maryland Terrapins. Gentlemen, always a pleasure breaking down the biggest games. Folks can follow Dusty on Twitter at Dusty Dvorak. Dust, safe travels. You'll have to let us know about your maiden voyage to Kinnick Stadium. We talk to you about the biggest games right here on the Bet the Board podcast, same time next week.
Sounds good, boys. My favorite hour of every single week, joining you guys, and love all the people that are fans of Bet the Board podcast. Some great followers, some great tweets out there, so keep them coming. We're just getting started as we're midway through the season, boys.
Payne, what's the line in Seinfeld? It's not a lie if you believe it.
I believe that's the one, yep.
You know, I should have been a little bit harder, Payne, for that Scott Frost meltdown on Dusty. You know, something he could have done to make sure we didn't actually have to go to overtime to cash that ticket, with probably not the best of the number in that +4, +4.5 range.
Oof. That would have been nice. It was a scary game. And I feel bad for Scott Frost because you know how good he is. And talking to a couple of the local folks in Lincoln, Nebraska, they still believe in Scott Frost, but the honeymoon phase is over a little bit at this point. You got to stick with him because there's nothing past him. If Scott Frost can't do it, no one else is going to. I think if you stick with him. The one thing that I like to see, though, is and why we were on the under in the win total is because he's not going to sacrifice his system. He probably could have devised something to win a few more games this year. Same thing with Willie Taggart. Probably could have just went to an I formation offense and not really had his beat up offensive tackles play a huge role. But it's not about that. They're going to be here for this year. They're going to be here for the long haul. So they want to really implement their system. And I would think for Scott Frost, he's going to compete for the West title in the Big Ten here. Probably next year, he'll be a little more competitive. Year three, he's got a real shot to win it. And by year four, I think they could be dominant in the West side just based on his coaching status. I do love, though, have you noticed his press conferences?
You know what? I've watched some of them early in the year. I haven't watched as many of them recently, to be honest.
He's full-blown Midwest guy. He's got the camo hat, got a little dip in the mouth. Down here in Florida, he was the pretty boy. He was clean cut. Everything was good. The women were loving Scott Frost. Now he's really adhered to that Midwest vibe.
You got to play the political game and appeal to your constituents to try and endear yourself to a fan base. I will say, despite their record, I really like what I've seen out of Adrian Martinez and believe he's got all the makings of being to this Nebraska program what Mackenzie Milton was to UCF to help him turn the corner. So big things ahead for Nebraska fans. I know we have a very strong listenership out there for Cornhuskers, who there will be brighter days ahead, rest assured with that. What I did find interesting, though, Payne, is you listen to some of the media experts and on game day in that morning, a lot of them were saying if Nebraska won that game against Northwestern, they really saw them as a potential bowl team getting to 6-6 with the only surefire loss on their schedule remaining, Ohio State. That was a little bit of a leap of faith, I do have to say.
Oh, definitely. No question about it.
All right. We've previewed the biggest games with a massive assist, as always, to the third member of our team in Dusty Dvorak. But this isn't just a three-man weave on this podcast. There's a fourth man that contributes quite a bit as well. He joins us every Wednesday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, we finally hit the midway point of the college football season. I have to ask, how'd last weekend go for the good guys?
Bet online, you mean the good guys? Absolutely. No, no, it's another good weekend in college football. Really, no complaints on college football this year, unlike last year when I was complaining just about every other week. The players won in LSU, Bama again, and BC, House, huge on Tulsa, Ole Miss, Memphis. But yeah, a really good week. Good Saturday. Great Saturday.
Handle continuing to improve as well, Dave. You guys seeing pretty healthy volumes year over year and week to week?
Compared to last year, yeah, absolutely handles up. This is the time of the season where it plateaus a little bit. You know, some guys, September is always the biggest, and then into October, but then, you know, October, November, then it plateaus a little bit. But yeah, compared to last year, absolutely. But compared to, you know, week one, week two, it plateaus.
And Dave, when we're looking at college football week eight here, some decent-sized games here, Oregon, Washington State, Mississippi State, LSU. What does it look like in terms of sharp action and maybe some public liability coming in at this point in the week?
Yeah, and that has a lot to do with it too, Todd. You know, the games, and the games are, as Payne said, kind of so-so this week. So action might not be as big as it is other weekends when there's bigger games. But there's still a lot of action coming in. Sharp, Ole Miss +4, that's +3.5. Washington State -1.5 and -2, that's now -3. Southern Miss -17, they're now -17.5. Nevada +3.5, they're +3. Appalachian State -24.5, they're 25.5. San Diego State -27, they're up to 28. Public, 78% on Stanford, 73% on Ohio State. Michigan at Michigan State, that's currently the biggest bet game of the weekend, and there's 64% of the actions on Michigan. Oregon, 69% at Washington State. Oklahoma, 81%. NC State, 87% at Clemson, and NC State has the highest bet count so far. And LSU, 67% versus Mississippi State. So those are the biggest public leans so far.
Dave, when you mentioned that NC State game, and it's a game we previewed early on in the show, knowing it's two unbeatens in the ACC, does that surprise you at all that you're seeing so much money against the top five team with NC State there?
Yeah, it did. I kind of had a, you know, I saw it Sunday when the early lines came up, bettors were coming in, and I thought it was just, you know, the early guys getting value. But yeah, this late in the week, it does surprise me a lot. I would think, you know, around 60%, closer to 50%, just because they're playing Clemson. But that does surprise me a lot that it's that high.
Yeah, always crazy to see some of the betting trends and see some of the public underdogs. As we know, the recreational bettor has changed some of their preferences and tendencies over the last couple of seasons, so not quite what it would have been if we had this discussion 5-7 years ago. But for those players that may want to try and get in on some of the fun, Dave, whether or not they have an account with betonline.ag, you guys have promotions for returning customers and for some of the newbies as well, correct?
Absolutely. Head on over to betonline.ag. Sign up for an account if you do not have one. Use promo code 75BTB. For 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. Max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. And NBA started, as we all know, and we have the earliest openers on the NBA games in the entire industry. So if you like those early openers, betonline.ag is your place for the NBA.
It's Dave Mason. You can hear him every single Wednesday and Thursday right here on the Bet the Board podcast, breaking down all things from the sportsbook perspective, from the sharp action to the public liabilities. Encourage everyone out there listening to follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. Dave, best of luck this week in the college football ranks, and we'll chat with you tomorrow about the National Football League.
Can't wait. Talk tomorrow.
Hands down, Payne, the most staggering part of our chat with Dave, the fact that NC State, of any team in college football right now, has the most bet tickets as we sit here Wednesday.
It is one of the bigger early games, and I think you could see it. You could make a case for it, right? You've seen worse versions, technically, of NC State. Worse versions of NC State kind of compete with better versions of Clemson the last 2 years. Probably could have won one of those games. And now you're looking at an undefeated team catching 17.5. It's certainly causing me some pause on why it's that high. But it's a lot of points, especially when you think NC State could probably move the ball through the air a little bit there. And I'm interested to see how Trevor Lawrence responds this week a little bit in his second start at home. Because to me, he pressed a little bit against Syracuse. If you watched that game, it felt like he was trying to prove to fans that he was the best choice at quarterback. And the one thing that was pretty telling, I was reading some quotes about Trevor Lawrence this week. He said it was like the most hectic month of his entire life. He was so stressed out dealing with competing for the job, then winning and dealing with Kelly Bryant effectively quitting. So he had to answer all those questions. And then he was dealing with the injury. So during the bye week, I know Trevor Lawrence went back home, surrounded himself with the family, kind of relaxed to decompress a little bit. So I think we see a little different Trevor Lawrence here this week as well.
I mean, it's his team now. That week against Syracuse, there was a lot of transition. You had, like, as you mentioned, the Kelly Bryant distraction. It is his team now, and you wonder if that 63-3 win that Clemson put on Wake Forest is a sign that, hey, this team is starting to round into shape. We did see a scenario there where you had a very public underdog in Syracuse that you mentioned. The Cues got there easily. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how this game ultimately unfolds and where you see professionals plunk down their money should they pick a side in this particular game. But we've broken down all the games. We've spoken to Dave Mason. We know about where the public liabilities are, and no surprise there with a lot of the marquee matchups and some road favorites taking some money. But most importantly, Payne, where are we going for our best bet to keep this train on the tracks and that money train rolling through week 8 of the college football season?
Tough place to play. And our listeners will probably get a good chuckle at this, but we're going to fade LSU here.
Shocker. Actually, you know what? This might be the first time we faded LSU officially on the podcast, aside from their win total.
It is. You know, we hate them so much. We've actually haven't bet against them this year. but we do like Mississippi State here off the bye. It looked like their offense got some things going a little bit. That extra week of prep, I think learning a new system or continuing to learn it should play dividends here. You know, LSU, I mean, it's tough to get up 2 weeks in a row. It really
three
is.
3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, three. Oh, you're right. 3 weeks in a row. Yeah. This number just feels a little tall here, even with Mississippi State's win against Auburn. We made this significantly shorter. It's at 6.5, juiced towards LSU's favor. So I think this is a perfect time to buy to 7, get that 7, not only because it's a cheap buy with juice on LSU, but it's the right thing to do in college football, especially with the overtime rules. You know, if LSU gets the ball first, scores a touchdown, Mississippi State obviously needs to counter that with a touchdown. So if they can't, you're still in push territory. So there's actually more value in college football due to the rules buying to 7 than there is actually in the NFL, as crazy as that'll sound to some.
I like one of the things Dusty said, too, on this game, Payne, and I don't pick up on the same stuff. I don't watch film. I don't claim to watch games. You are exceptional in that regard in the NFL. Dusty probably watches more college football film than the two of us combined, obviously. Talking about how he saw subtle changes in that Mississippi State offense from early in the year against Kansas State to their performance against Auburn that led to that 300-plus yard explosion on the ground. You have to believe this offense is going to look even more dynamic with wrinkles with Joe Moorhead coming into this game off the bye. And so for me, that's ultimately what pushed me over to the side, especially with the defense we know that speaks for itself.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And hopefully the defense lives up to it, because the one thing that would cause some concern is the Bulldogs' defense. It is crazy as that sounds, right? They make a lot of the flash plays. They need to be stout here on all downs. One thing they are doing, they're allowing offenses on first and second down to get pick up first downs on 71% of the drive. So it needs to not just be the flash plays. They need to be solid down to down. And if they are, I think Mississippi State has a great chance here, not just cover, potentially pull the upset. I know looking at a lot of the math guys' numbers, this number is way off and should be closer to the most key number in football as opposed to the second most key number in football.
Get those cowbells ready, my friends. Bet the Board podcast is backing the boys from Starkville, Mississippi. Mississippi State plus 7 minus 20, your best investment for college football week 8. And Payne, it's that time of the week. I know everyone gets sad. All good things must come to an end, and we have to close up shop around these fine parts. Any PSAs, words of wisdom? You know, the floor is yours for, you know, 15 to 20 second send off.
We're back tomorrow with the NFL podcast, so there shouldn't be doom and gloom. We'll announce the week 6 NFL contest winner. We'll announce the 200th episode contest winner as well. So a lot of good things to look forward to, and it's a stock slate of NFL tomorrow. So tune into that as well.
Two for the price of one. College football on Wednesdays, NFL on Thursdays. You can't beat it this time of year. Best of luck to all of you, our loyal Bet the Board listeners, with your investments in college football this weekend. Special thanks to Dusty Dvoracek. Follow him on Twitter at Dusty Dvoracek. Dave Mason. Follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Payne and I are with you along this bumpy and more often than not smooth ride throughout the course of football season. Follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I am, of course, Todd Furman. And come Saturday evening after Mississippi State does the deed in Death Valley, we'll see you at the window.